Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 98 of the Rich Hunter Outdoors Podcast. This week, we got Austin Stone joining us again. This will be his fourth time on the show. It's always a lot of fun talking to him about public land stuff and just hunting strategy in general. The dude's killed a lot of big bucks. He knows what he's talking about, and I always learn something when we talk to him. And again, I just always enjoy talking to Austin about whitetails and getting on big mature deer. And he's in the middle of his whitetail slam now, too. We talked about that on the last episode he was on back in July. He was kind of getting amped up for going down to Kentucky. He went down there opening weekend, didn't have any luck, but he did learn some things about the property. So we talked to him about all that and more and kind of what's to come with his whitetail slam videos. And, you know, we got into a bunch of strategy stuff as well. So make sure you stick around for that. But before we get into it, don't forget about our partners for the podcast. First one being Grandpa Ray Outdoors. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for whitetail deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods. They were started in 2015, but John's been in the seed and nutrition business since 1991. With over 14 different food plot blends to choose from, you're not going to have any trouble finding what you're looking for, whether that be fall or spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it. When it comes to food plotting, they pretty much have it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They're going to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. They really take care of their clients. They're going to invest that into you, answer any questions that you're going to have, and make sure that, you know, you get the most bang for your buck. We've used our seed blends on client properties when we've put in food plots for guys. We've used them on our own properties for a couple years now, and the results have always been as good as advertised. Nate's got a plot right now that's in fall draw that we thought was going to be really dry this year and not do anything, and it's one of the best plots that I've seen this year with another dry fall that we've had. So, again, like I said, the results have always been as good as we thought they should be, and better in some cases. That's why we actually partnered with them in the first place, and that's why we're going to continue to partner with them on the podcast. If you guys want to check them out, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com. Use the discount code RHOPODCAST, that's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order. We're also a dealer for them, so you can always stop in and order from me, and I'll get you set up with that as well. Save you a little bit of money on shipping. Our other partner for the podcast is Rodney Hawkins. If you guys don't know, he is a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. He's been hunting and fishing Southern Illinois his whole life, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into his new job with Midwest Farm and Land. If you guys haven't heard of them, they're not your average real estate company. They sold over $85 million worth of ground in 2022 alone. They've got agents like Rodney all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them or any properties that might be available or getting yours listed, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. I know they've got some really nice listings out right now, kind of, you know, in our area, some really good properties, so you can check that out or talk to him about it. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors. He's currently got products from Radix Hunting. He's got camo dust. He's got Tacticam trail cameras, and he's adding stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that or the new stuff that they might have coming up, you can go to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. Our socials are Rich Hunter Outdoors. That's on Facebook and Instagram. Make sure you follow us at both of those places. Our Facebook group is the RHO Podcast Patrons. That's a private group where you get some exclusive content and you have some input on the show. RichHunterOutdoors.com is our website. If you guys find anything on there you like, we got the scents back in stock, the calming spray. We've got the buck and doe tarsal sprays. We've got apparel on there, and we also have our own blend of food plot seed as well. So you can use the discount code RHOPOD, that's all caps, no space, and you get 10% off of everything in your entire order on there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, make sure you follow us, leave us a review. That really helps us out as well, even though it doesn't seem like much. The YouTube channel, subscribe there. It's RidgeHunterOutdoors.com. The first episode of Fall Pursuit, that's our new show that we're doing on YouTube, will be out tomorrow. We've got a recovery of a really nice buck that Blake put down. We've got Dusty hunting with Dawson. He killed a really nice buck, his biggest buck to date. During the youth season, that's wrapping up today. And then we got Uncle Jeff on a nice doe the other night as well. So all that stuff will be on the first episode of Fall Pursuit. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the notification bell, and you'll know when that comes out. All right, all that out of the way, let's get into the conversation with Austin Stone. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, we got Austin Stone back with us. Austin, I appreciate you coming back on, especially on short notice like this.
Yeah, absolutely. No worries, man. I always appreciate jumping on a call with you.
Yeah, for sure. So we were just talking a little bit, and we were texting last night. It's been a while since we've talked, and obviously the season's rolling now. We're in a week, over a weekend here in Illinois. I know you got down to Kentucky for the opener down there, and we haven't talked to you since then. So maybe that's a good place to start. If everybody listening doesn't know, Austin's trying to do a whitetail slam this year on mostly public ground, right? Or all public ground?
All public ground.
All public ground. So that's Illinois, Kentucky, Missouri, Kansas, and North Dakota?
North Dakota was on plan. So we've had some changes happen over the last month or so. So we're gonna try to, we might be having to throw some audibles into the slam.
Right.
So.
Okay, so that's, in general, though, that's kind of the idea what you got going on. But you went down to Kentucky for the opener down there, and you were on some really nice bucks. But like it always happens when season rolls around, they don't always show up. They don't necessarily cooperate all the time. So why don't you just give us the rundown on what happened down there in Kentucky?
So overall, the Kentucky hunt was great. It was slow movement, which is kind of what we expected. It was hot. You know, hunting pressure didn't really hit until about the last week leading into season, which is what we expected. Mm-hmm. And every time that happens, it gives the deer a little bit of a shock, and they kind of go into a hole sometimes when they really start getting pushed around a little bit more than what they're used to. So the bucks we were after, we were still on them. They were just holding up real tight. Like we lost, the daylight pictures became a lot more few and far between, and it required us to get really close. So being on deer like we did, it really made the stress of the trip really low. Mm-hmm. It just meant that we need to be real smooth and careful, just slowly trying to get closer and closer to just figure out exactly where they're bedding and see if we can get in on him without bumping him. So that's kind of the trick early season like that, is you got to get on top of where they decide to bed for the day. And I did on opening day, out of curiosity, I was sitting on the edge of a known bedding area that I was hunting for this big buck I'm on. And I ended up pulling an all day sit just out of curiosity, see what happened movement wise. And I had a couple does come in. In about a 6 hour period, those does only got up twice, and they were only on their feet for about 20 minutes each time.
Yeah.
So they bedded down for 3 to 4 hours before they got back up again. And what they did is I watched them, they'd graze over about 40 yards and graze back and lay back in the exact same spot. And then when they got up for that second time, they did the exact same route, grazed over the 40 yards and back. So I was like, man, that's exactly what our bucks are doing. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't on top of these deer, there's a good chance that you weren't even going to see them.
Right.
So, but the good thing was that they were still there. So we were slowly just trying to inch in, and we're playing long ball with them. We're playing the long game.
Right.
So we didn't get it done, you know, over opening week. we're just collecting more intel and slowly putting those puzzle pieces together.
Right. And I don't, sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
No, I don't think I mentioned it, but opening day down there was over a month ago now. It was September 2nd. Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, the Kentucky opener was well over a month ago now. And that's kind of the time frame we're talking about. So, and like you're saying there, if you're not within 60 yards of where that guy's betting and he happens to come your direction one of those times he stands up, and maybe even closer than that because he may not even be moving 40 yards, you may not even get to lay eyes on him, kind of like what happened, I guess.
Yep.
But it's so tough to get in there that close to him, especially if you don't have just a perfect wind, and you pretty much have to know exactly where they're at.
Yeah, and I mean, as you know, you could be on a general bedding area that you've located, but a buck always has multiple bedding areas, and he tends to bed in multiple different spots also. So, you know, maybe this one bedding area he got bumped out of a few times that I didn't know about.
Right.
And he chose to bed in another one of his bedding areas. And if that's the case, you know, that's public land. That's just part of it. But if that's the case, you know, where you would be set up or possibly you might have got eyes on him on one of his bedding areas that you got located, he was bumped out and ended up going to a different one.
Right.
So it's kind of that ever-changing chase that just kind of happens. So, and this kind of where we hunt too, we don't hunt a lot of open glassing ground. So it's not like we're trying to do this where we could glass these deer from a few hundred yards out. I mean, we're in brush. So you gotta be on top of them to see them.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. And did you guys leave any cameras down there or anything when you left to try to keep tabs on those bucks? Have you seen them since you guys left?
Oh yeah. We left cameras out. And actually that's what this last weekend was for. We got down there for a really quick trip. I mean, we drove through the night on Friday night, got there at 3 a.m. and spent basically a day and a half down there to adjust cameras and do some scouting while we did some hunting.
Right.
The one of the bucks were on the 9 point. He's been pretty regular. And then the 10 point, I think he's shifted a little bit. So I'm kind of in the game of figured out where he's shifted to, basically.
Right.
So I feel pretty comfortable about what I know about him. I just need to get eyes on him again and play the preferred food source game.
Yeah. So you're adjusting those cameras like you're talking about now from where you were scouting them for that early season, late summer type of pattern to now where they're falling really into their fall range and where they're going to be for the next month plus. And that's kind of, so what are you looking for when it comes to that, like setting up your cameras and stuff? Is this where you're starting to look at scrapes and different trails around doe bedding areas, that kind of thing? What were you guys looking for when you're scouting and for putting your cameras?
So one of the top things we're looking for is...
Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Is what the preferred food source is and how it's changed on this specific property. And then obviously I'm always looking for scrapes.
Right.
If I can find a fresh scrape, I'm throwing a camera on it. Mm-hmm. So I have one scrape that's open that I had a camera on, and it was actually open earlier in September. And I kind of helped it along also by opening it. And then before I left on that trip, went ahead and opened that scrape up and then threw a camera on it. Giant community scrape. It's a historical scrape. Mm-hmm. And then this past weekend, I personally didn't run into any scrapes back where I'm spending most of my time. So it's not, nothing's opened up there yet, but it's still early.
Right.
So, Dakota ran into a few scrapes kind of in some of the spots that he was scouting. Nothing insane, but he ran into a few. And it's just kind of hit or miss when it comes to scrapes. And then the preferred food source, there were some green fields that were planted that we didn't know about. That have been sprouting and growing over the last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So where typically we would focus more on oaks, right, and white oaks especially, and there were persimmons dropping. That property has a lot of persimmons also.
Mm-hmm.
The deer are not in the hardwoods just yet. So, like, they're staying in the thickets, just like they were early season. So bed to food,
right,
pattern, same kind of pattern. But now they're in thicker, denser fall bedding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of getting into the hardwoods just yet, they're in these clover fields and some turnips and whatnot, and kind of food plots that weren't there a month ago, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So a lot has actually changed in the area when it comes to food, and it kind of – it makes it really great and very difficult to target all at the same time because they have so many options.
Yeah, no doubt.
So there's not like a limiting resource. There's not really a limited resource, mm-hmm, to truly target. You have to evolve with what they prefer to eat at that period in time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at right now. So I'm moving cameras over to those preferred food sources. I'm hitting ditch crossings and pinch points, and any kind of scrape that I find, that's where I've adjusted my cameras to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you're talking about there with the preferred food source thing is interesting, because especially when we do talk to guys about what food plots to plant and things like that, and even our own, if you're, yep, going to have a bunch of winter wheat, if you're going to have a 200-acre field of winter wheat, if you're the farmer's, yep, doing cover crops, then you might have to plant like a winter rye or oats, something that they would prefer over that wheat. If, yep, if you don't have that close by, you can get away with wheat, which is a little cheaper option, and,
uh-huh,
be a little more cost effective on it. And since there's no other option for them, that's going to be their preferred food source. So it's similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
If there's lush green fields around, you know, that's where they're going to be. And if there's a really big white oak crop, you know, that's where they're going to be if they're hanging out in that area. So,
yeah,
it's not only like you're talking about finding the food sources, but finding what they're preferring. I think that's a pretty good point there that probably gets overlooked a lot.
It does. And honestly, being a public land hunter, this is not a problem that I typically run into.
Like, right.
This is a problem that you typically see on private land,
mm-hmm,
because you're purposefully planting these preferred food sources.
Mm-hmm.
So actually running into this problem on public, it's very exciting to me, and I'm really excited to dive into it and really collect as much info as I can. And then at the same time, it's like, okay, well, this could get interesting, mm-hmm, because now where I typically have a limited resource and I dive into the oaks because that's my now limited resource and preferred food source over the crop fields, right?
Mm-hmm.
I now have to I'm doing the same thing hunting the middle ground with hunting pressure. So I'm still mapping that out, right? And that's how I find bedding.
Right.
And then too, I'm like, okay, what bedding area is he going to choose this month because of this specific food source? And will it change next month because that other field will be more lush?
Right.
So it'll be kind of fun to play with this as the season goes on. So
yeah.
High traffic areas is where I'm sticking my cameras right now.
Yeah. And so are you still pretty focused your scouting time and your cameras on Kentucky, or have you located any bucks in Illinois or Kansas yet, or Missouri?
Man, I haven't had much time to, I haven't had a chance to get to Illinois yet.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my time right now, especially when it comes to cameras, are is Kentucky.
Yeah.
So I've found some open scrapes in Kansas, some really big tracks, and some really good sign that I'm excited to dive into. And so I'm pumped about that. I haven't got out to Missouri a whole lot yet. So most of my time, honestly, right now has been spent Kentucky and a little bit of Kansas. So that big buck I'm on in Kentucky has kind of got me obsessed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if you're on one, you might as well try to get that one, get him down, get that out of the way, right? And then move on to a different state. And like, you know, I think we talked before, you always have November as that wild card for, say, Illinois, if you don't make it over here to scout or up there where you're going, you know. That's always something you have in your back pocket, is catching one moving during the rut.
And that's the thing, too, is, you know, trying to harvest a buck on purpose, like a specific buck on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You most of the time, you've got to do it outside the rut because they become very random in the rut.
Yep.
And so it takes time. It takes a lot of legwork, a lot of miles in the boots, and takes a lot of time to really invest into a deer of that caliber. And but it's fun. That's the part that I enjoy. And then, like you said, the rut, it makes it easy to really just dive into your woodsmanship and hunt.
Right.
You know, main movement patterns and the fresh sign, and just see what moves by and whatnot. So it's very similar styles of hunting and slightly different all at the same time.
Yeah, I think the preparation is the biggest difference in it, and where if you're hunting that one specific buck, you got to figure out where he's at. And like you said, October and December, if he makes it through that rut and the gun seasons, those are the times to kill those specific bucks that you're after, because you can get them in their home range. You can kind of hammer down where they're going to be, and then and get on them that way. And that is all that preseason preparation, some in-season scouting, running cameras and stuff like that. And like you're talking about November, you're still using some of the same hunting tactics and strategies, but when it comes to the preparation, like you said, you're finding where the deer are at, and that's where you're going to be.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So where you know, the rest of the year, you're chasing preferred food sources,
mm-hmm.
right? And primary bedding around those preferred food sources. And then in November, you're chasing the herd.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, it's just kind of, it's fun to see how each phase of the season evolves, and how these deer, especially a specific deer, you really get to learn in his habits,
mm-hmm.
and how he interacts with that property.
Yeah. And that's even a thing about during the rut is, like we're talking about preferred food sources, but even as you're trying to find the herd, within that, you can try to find the does, the more mature does that may be coming in earlier. As you get later into the rut, maybe it's the younger does that haven't come into heat yet that the bucks haven't found. That's evolving as well as the month of November goes on, even.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, too, is what once you get to that super high caliber class of buck,
mm-hmm.
Those mature does are seeking him out just as much. So mm-hmm, he's mm-hmm. going to lock down really fast with a doe. Like the first doe that comes in his area that comes into heat, he's locked it down with her.
Yep, he's been there and done that. He knows what's happening.
Yeah, and those does also want the more mature deer, especially the mature does,
mm-hmm.
want the more mature buck to breed anyways.
Yep.
So that's kind of where you if that deer has everything that he needs in that one specific spot, he doesn't have to go anywhere. And it makes it great because he's there, and then it makes it very difficult to put in the truck all at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a couple guys. Well, Nate's one of them, and a buddy of ours too. They're both, they know of deer. One guy's been on this deer for several years now, or at least a couple, 2-3 years. And Nate's got one that's similar this year. You know where they're at. They got what they need. They're hanging out close, but you just can't do anything with them without running them off. And they know that. They know they're safe where they're at, and that's why they stay there. Mm-hmm. They don't have to stray very far for anything, so it makes them hard to hunt, unless maybe you catch a doe pulling them by out of their area in November. And even then it's tough because, like you said, you know, those mature does are going to go find them as much as the bucks are trying to find them, and they're going to lock down early. And then they may not have to go far because they might have another one close. So there's a lot that goes into it. So there, I mean, there's definitely positives and negatives to both of that, like you're saying.
It's and that's the positive is, you know, he feels so safe there that you've done that he's got everything he needs, but because of that, you have to get so close to him. You have to get on top of him.
Yep.
And you know, his daylight movement may be extremely limited.
Right.
And if that's the case, then he could get really interesting to really narrow down. Those kind of deer, a lot of times those kind of deer may take you a couple of years to gather enough intel.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And it's fun, you know, see, you know, you got the bucks that are real homebodies that won't wander very far.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the bucks that will wander a bit more just because it's their more personality.
Yep.
And obviously the bucks that wander more, they're easier to put on the ground compared to those bucks that just kind of hold up.
Yeah. Yeah. We got, I had a deer in the shop this year actually that I had pictures of 3 miles from where he ended up getting killed. And part of that was, you know, that's their personality. And part of that was the way the crops were. When the corn was all out there, he was where I had pictures of him. As soon as they harvested the corn, he had to go find somewhere else to stay. And, you know, that's where he ended up, was 3 miles from where he was spending, you know, the latter part of October. And then I'm sure does pulled him around too and stuff.
Yeah.
That happens quite a bit, I think, even on the crop rotation thing. That's another thing that Nate's dealing with right now. Fortunately for me, most of the stuff I'm hunting around is beans this year, with the exception of a little bit of it. So there is one spot I'm holding out a little hope for the same thing, but when the corn's still out there, even as it gets into October and they're starting to shift off their summer patterns, they can still be really hard to locate on cameras or see from the stand because, I mean, when they get in those waterways in a cornfield, they don't have to go anywhere, and they're not going to.
Yep. Yeah, I mean they don't have to. They got water, they got cover and food, all right there with them. If they don't have to leave, they're not going to leave.
No.
So, and that's a big reason. You know, that's why they get as big as they get.
Yep.
They figured out those spots, and they just hold up in them. And that's where I think this really big deer that I'm working on right now, I think he's going to require a little bit of a creative technique.
Right.
So I think I might have to get pretty creative with
and we're not
deer.
Talking about a spotlight out the window of a truck creative technique.
No.
I've heard not some guys creative. Calling that creative.
Not that creative.
Right. Within the boundaries of the law, of course.
The ethical way of and lawful way of hunting.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah,
I know, right? Yeah, you got real creative with that one.
Yeah, we see plenty of that, the creative personalities when it comes to deer hunting.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, but no, back to kind of your point there, it does sometimes on those big bucks, especially I would assume on public land, you just got to get a little bit more crafty with them and figure out a different way to get to them. Because like where I'm at on the private ground, until it gets down to almost gun season, because they're pretty hard on them during gun season, at least on one farm that I hunt. But, I mean, until it gets to that point, I can pretty much sit back and stay pretty low impact and wait for them to come by my stand as opposed to having to get too creative to go get them. Now, when it comes down to that last point, it's where we've talked about before, you can start implementing some of those public ground strategies even on your private ground.
100%.
And not that I'm not doing some of that anyway, but I would assume on public ground it's even worse. You have to get, like when you find one and you know he's there, you got to beat everybody else to him and hopefully, you know, even get him before he gets too much pressure and leaves.
Yeah. And that's, you know, kind of where I've got this deal here is, you know, I've got probably 40 acres of pretty unhuntable bedding cover that I'm pretty sure he's holding up in. And
unhuntable, like, For what reasons are you talking?
Extremely dense, young, immature timber.
Okay, yep.
Like it's going to have to be a ground and pound situation if you get in there quietly.
Right. And then so, you're talking like really close shot too, I'd assume, in something like that.
You're like he's on top of you
kind
of situation. So that's where it might get creative. But I know this spot well enough that if I can make sure that he's there, I feel pretty good about possibly getting creative on him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just going to be just chip away at it,
right?
Kind of situation without bumping him out completely. Because it's crazy the amount of cameras that are out there and the amount of people walking it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that more deer don't get shot off of this property is kind of astonishing to me.
Yeah.
But what it shows you, though, is it shows you how well these deer have adapted to be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And just have figured it out.
Right.
So that's why we got the age class that we do, even though this property just gets hammered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people making mistakes out there hunting.
Yeah.
I'm just not being able to get on deer. But that situation you're talking about with him on that bedding, if it comes down to even like late October, early November, and you can catch him in the right mood, if he's the type of deer, I mean, if you got the wind, that's even one of those situations where you could go in and potentially, you know, make some noise going in, almost like you see guys doing moose hunts and stuff.
Right.
Get him in a fighting mood, like that time of year where his testosterone's as high as it's going to be, and as long as he can't wind you, if you go in there and essentially act like another buck, he might even come to you, you know, and that may be something where in that situation might be what it comes down to.
I was thinking that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been kind of, especially as the weekend went on and I was kind of seeing what the area was looking like, how it was changing, and thinking through my head different techniques, and that was one of them that came to mind, was possibly seeing if I can get in there just close enough and mm-hmm. see if I can lure him to me a little bit. And I wish I thought about this, but I wouldn't probably be able to do this without messing it up, but actually building some kind of a mock scrape in an area that is very difficult to get to.
Right, right.
If I don't have, and I'm thinking next year here, mm-hmm. if I'm not able to put him on the ground now, I'm thinking through, is like, okay, what am I going to do in the off season? Knowing what I know now, what are my steps now in the off season? What information do I need to gather?
Right.
To put those missing pieces together that possibly could put him down. So, it's kind of playing a balancing act of how aggressive I want to get with this deer.
Yeah.
And making sure he is where I think he is.
Right. Yeah. Cause you don't want to, you got to be aggressive maybe to a certain point, but it's still, you don't want to run. You don't want to be the reason that he leaves and, you know, that he runs off.
Yeah. You don't want to be the reason for running your hunt.
Yeah. And aggressive doesn't mean stupid either. Cause you still, like, even what we're talking about there, like if you're going in there and making a mock scrape, or you're going in there and maybe purposefully making some noise and scraping some leaves and trees and calling, I mean, you got to be absolutely sure that you got the wind where you can come in, and you have to put yourself in a position where he's not going to see you before you see him, or he's not going to see you while you're calling at him. So you have to have enough stuff in between you and where you think he's at, that, and it may be a situation where you don't even see him until he's right on top of you, but he doesn't see you either. You still have to be smart about it, but you can, you can be a smart and aggressive.
Yeah. And that's where it's a very much a calculated aggression. Mm-hmm. So it's because you don't want to chase him out of there and run your long game on him. But you just got to go get him, and you got to figure out how to put him down, because he'll just live there.
Yeah.
Yep. And won't get a shot at him if you don't make those moves that are necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially a situation like that. If he's found a place where he thinks he's safe, like with the pressure that you're talking about, it's almost like, you know, that same cornfield thing. He's not going to leave unless you give him a reason to leave.
Yep.
So if you don't go in there and run him out, you know, at least he'll be there next year. You can go in there and try to get a shot at him. And if you do it smart, even if it doesn't work, you know, hopefully he's probably going to be there next year, because they're smart enough to remember that. I don't know if it's smart be the right word, but they remember that stuff from year to year.
Yeah, absolutely, that they do. Then that's also why they are where they are, is mm-hmm. that they figured out areas where maybe they don't get bumped as often.
Right.
And also areas that, if they get bumped, or when they get bumped, not if, they will get bumped.
Mm-hmm.
When they get bumped, were they able to escape without any issues?
Right.
So once he figures out those locations, he's going to return to that location. even the next day after he gets bumped out of it, he'll return back to it. He's like, because boom, you just confirmed his reasoning for betting where he's betting. You bumped him out and he survived. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be back until you start bumping him out on a very consistent basis. And that's when he's going to truly shift out.
Right, right. So what's the last couple of weeks look like for you? Have you been in a tree much? I know you said you started a new job, so obviously that's going to take up some of your time, but or quite a bit of your time. But have you been able to get out much at all? Been seeing anything good?
Not as much as I'd like to. That's for sure.
Right. That's always the case.
Yeah. I've been scouting Kansas. I spent a day or two there doing some walking, and then Kentucky, spent some time in a tree this last weekend and walking. Aside from that, I haven't been able to really get out. Mm-hmm. So after this coming weekend, I'll be in a tree pretty nonstop.
Yeah.
So lot life will kind of smooth back out just a little bit. So it'll be nonstop after this weekend. That's
good.
For sure.
Good deal. And we're supposed to get another cold front, I think, at the end of this week, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I was looking at the weather. It looks like there's another cold front moving in this week, which will be great. It'll start firing up more scrapes.
Mm-hmm.
Getting these deer to leave a little bit more sign, get a little bit more aggressive, and tell us exactly where we need to be.
Yeah, that's... And we're still obviously going to hit that October lull that we're kind of in now that will be until like the third end of the third week. But those cold fronts will give you a little bit better chance to maybe one gets up a little earlier, or maybe they start feeling a little bit frisky early and they go make a scrape or something, or they make some rubs and let you know they're there. Again, especially on public ground, if you're not running cameras, maybe that gives you a reason to go out. And then if that cold front got them up just a little bit early and they're making scrapes or rub or something, that gives you hope that there's something there worth shooting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then get some fired up a little bit, even at night, hitting those scrapes also.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of leaves us a little bit of a tell.
Yep.
And, hey, there's possibly a mature buck here that we can kind of target.
Yeah.
So,
and that's I know during the season it's a little tougher to do, but it's something that you can look out for on your way in and on your way out, especially.
Yeah.
But we talked about it before, back in the summer, where one of the bucks that you'd shot, I believe one of the bucks that you'd shot, you had noticed this pattern of scrapes on the backside of a ridge, maybe it was, and just finding out not only, okay, there's a scrape here, but, you know, I remember seeing one 100 yards from the truck, too, that kind of seemed like maybe it was on the same line. And then maybe if you see another one, try to start patterning. Maybe look on a map and mark where those scrapes are, and then it might tell you something, especially if you get a topo map on there. Maybe there's a little bit of a roll that you didn't really notice. Maybe it's a draw or something, or maybe the structure that you do notice that's around, and that's a movement pattern for him. And you can kind of trace that back to food or bedding and get in where you need to be.
Yeah, and that's something I did this weekend was around this bedding area and around those food sources. I was paying attention to where the sign picked up,
mm-hmm.
where the increase in tracks were, and then where they died off. And then they increased again, and then they died off. And then I would dive into it, and like, oh, okay, well, here's an increase here, and then also here's an increase here. And then you look on the map, you're like, hey, that's a straight line. That's a straight line from that field all the way back here into bedding.
Right.
I didn't take a straight line to it, but a deer could,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you start finding areas like that where you've got an increased amount of tracks versus other areas, you start marking those and you start setting a camera on them and just piecing it together, right? You start seeing a little bit of a pattern to it,
mm-hmm.
and it could point you in the direction. And I bumped some deer. I didn't see what it was at the backside of this bedding where I think he is, mm-hmm. and it sounded like dadgum moose running through the field. So I'm like, I don't know if that was him, but it could have been.
Right.
And if it was, he connects in a straight line three or four different points of increased movement that I found.
Yeah.
So if that's the case and that was him, then I might be on to set something when it comes to that point. So
mm-hmm.
that's where just like, give me a picture. Let me know you're here. and then I feel pretty good about where you possibly are.
Right.
So, and then you start looking at little soft edges. The soft edges are, that's, I think, especially on pressure ground, that's where you make your kills and your hunts.
Mm-hmm.
The hard edges are always going to get hunted, and they're easier to find.
Yep.
Sometimes these soft edges, you can't actually see them on a map.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a tiny ditch, a tiny bench, something that doesn't show up on a map, and even on an aerial, just a slight change in vegetation.
Yep.
And those are the edges that these bucks are moving on. And you might not know that edge exists until you actually put boots on the ground and find it.
Right.
And you're like, hey, this is actually, and then you look at the direction it's leading, you're like, that's in line with where I think the movement primarily is coming from. Right. Like, this makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So once you can find little slight changes like that, where gives that deer a little bit of an edge to walk along that maybe other people are missing.
Yep.
That helps you get really creative also.
Yeah. And we talk about that a lot, especially if we do consultations or talking about guys, improving their property. Is deer are obviously creatures of edge. So the more edges that you can create and give them, the better. And like you're saying, and you know, we did a consultation earlier this, late summer, and we looked on the aerial map and we saw on the topo, saw a ridge that we thought could be a pretty good point in the middle of the timber on this property. The way it laid out, it wasn't like all timber, but there was a pretty good patch north and south on the east side of the property. And we thought the point of this ridge comes out about the middle of this timber, and it looked pretty good. So that's what we were thinking, but we got in there and it was actually better than we thought, because there was just that little bit of change like you're talking about from pretty mature timber to where you could tell the canopy had been opened up, like maybe some trees died or something, you know, 10 years ago or so. And there was a lot of little stuff. There were some bigger trees mixed in, so you couldn't really see it on the aerial, but it was a considerable edge within the timber that just solidified that spot for us. And, you know, I think it's going to be a really killer spot for those guys, not only because it's on a point of that ridge where you would like to be anyway, especially during the rut, but it also, there's enough difference between that mature timber and that younger stuff that's really thick that maybe some does are going to bed in there, and maybe a buck beds in there on the backside of that too, and it gives them a place to go check for does. And it's that little edge of travel where you can kind of predict their movement in a timber situation where you can't always do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's something that, I mean, I've looked through for the, you know, for a lot long times. I love finding areas like that because you truly can't see them. You can't see how significant that edge is until you walk up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's typically where I talk about those daylight scrapes. That's where you're going to find the daylight scrapes, is on those hidden little edges
that are hard
to find, especially on pressured ground. That's where they're going to be.
Yeah, and like you said, it's hard to see from a map, and most people are doing their scouting from a map, which is fine because you can see stuff, but you have to realize that also everybody else is doing that too, and they're probably seeing that same spot.
Yeah,
and that's, like, in my mind, some of the things you can look for are those ridge tops. Get a topo map and see, even if it looks like there's nothing going on in there, maybe it's the bottom of that where, like you said, maybe there's a ditch at the bottom if there's two ridges running alongside each other. Maybe on the aerial it looks like there's nothing, but down in the bottom of that, maybe there's a ditch and there's some, like, different type of vegetation around at the bottom of it. Or maybe it's like that situation I was just talking about. Those are some clues that maybe you can look at. Obviously, different types of different colors within the trees on the aerial view sometimes can be a tell of that. Maybe it's just the different types of trees that are in there. But occasionally you can tell that, hey, maybe there's something going on here, but it's not that obvious. Right.
Yeah.
So we all know what it looks like when there's a pine grove in the middle of a hardwood timber.
It
may not be that obvious, but it might be just a slight thing, especially if that meets up with something on your topo. It might be a place worth going and looking at, especially on public ground.
Oh, yeah. And when just like you just said, when one of those soft hidden edges converges with a more major edge, that's a killer spot.
Yep.
So in a technique I'm kind of using right now with gathering intel on this deer is using historical maps on Google, pulling up
Yeah.
Historical images.
Yep.
Aerial images on Google, and seeing, you know, seeing maybe did it flood? Was it moan? Was anything burnt? What happened? And that maybe exposes a feature inside the thicket that you otherwise couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I'm looking at too, is I'm looking at interior edges using the historical maps, you know, as the vegetation, go back to when the vegetation was maybe slightly more immature.
Yep.
Or something happened and killed it all off. You can actually see what the lay of the land looks like a little bit better versus just this thick, dense canopy of brush.
Right.
So that's another thing I've been looking at quite a bit too, is okay, what's the interior edges look like?
Yep.
And is something I can go off of that could give me some kind of more aggressive hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But like we were talking about, getting creative.
Yeah.
A creative hunt.
Yep. And that's just a creative way to scout, because you might not be able to tell on a map the difference between 25-year-old timber and 15-year-old timber. But if you can look at an aerial image from 10 years ago, you can see the difference in 15 and 5. And
yes,
then maybe that's going to be some kind of an edge in there that you could potentially expose and hunt and capitalize on, that maybe you're one of the only few guys that have noticed that.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you can't get to it. Like if, you know, if it's one of those areas where like, this is so thick, I truly can't get to it. But if you can locate something like that on the interior, maybe you can figure out another way around.
Mm-hmm.
or just wait till postseason and then go in there and scout it.
Yep.
And when you're there during postseason, figure out your access at that point.
Yeah.
And because if you can figure out, because that's the time when you really just dive into it and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And a great time to really find your access into hard to reach areas like that. But during season, you just got to be a little bit more careful. You can't just basically grid search a thick, dense area like that.
Right. Yep.
So, but no, that's a great way to get creative with like online scouting and see if you're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
That's right in front of your face almost.
Right. And that hopefully everybody else is missing in that situation.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And even if, you know, and maybe it's the case that maybe they're not missing it. Maybe they just haven't figured out how to hunt it.
Right.
And then you go in and figure out how to hunt it and you're good.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing too, with getting with public lands. It's not that you're seeing anything different than what a lot of people are seeing, especially those that really know what they're doing. But maybe you just figured out a tactic that they hadn't figured out and you can capitalize on a hunt.
Right. Yep.
And that's where it just kind of gets interesting.
Yeah, for sure. That's the kind of little stuff too that makes the difference in, you know, going out there and maybe running into a buck in November every 3 or 4 years, and going out there and being able to at least get on deer year over year and have good hunts on mature deer, or, you know, the types of bucks that you're looking for.
Yeah, 100%. It's keeping an open mind. It's always learning. It's always working. And that's something, when I did this Whitetail Slam, when I started this, that's something I wanted to do, was showcase the work that goes into it, because you don't see all these, the behind the scenes stuff, you know, the thousands of miles and hours spent actually getting ready for the hunt. You kind of just see the finished product of the hunt.
Yep.
So I wanted to, you know, want to showcase everything that goes into actually making this happen.
Yep.
So that's kind of the fun part about this series also.
Yep. And I gotta say, I think you've done a great job of that from the preseason series and now even getting into the hunting part of it. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time today, and we're gonna head to the stand here before too much longer. So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody where they can find your series, the Whitetail Slam series, and all your other stuff before we get out of here. I know you've been on, I didn't write the episode numbers down, I should have, but Austin's been on with us, I think, this is your fourth time, I believe, and it's always good talking to you. The last one was back in July, though. I didn't realize it had been that long, but...
it had been July?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, or like second week of July. But either way, let everybody know where they can find you. and Tactical Approach Outdoors and all that stuff.
Absolutely. See, the Whitetail Slam is on YouTube. If you look up Tactical Approach Outdoors, you can find all my videos there. I'm on all social media platforms, Tactical Approach Outdoors. And my website is tacticalapproachoutdoors.com. Mm-hmm. And if you have any questions, you know, about anything I do or any of my services, I would love to hear from you. Don't hesitate to send me a message.
For sure, man. Well, hey, again, I appreciate you jumping on here with us. It's always fun talking to you. I always learn something. And hopefully everybody listening does too.
Yeah, I enjoy talking to you, man. It's always a good time.
Yep. Well, I'll let you get out of here. Like I said, I'm gonna get this thing posted, and then we're gonna head to the stand and hopefully get Javen on a doe tonight.
Heck yeah, good luck. I hope you do.
All right. Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Take care, buddy. Yep.